evidence of his desire to take this one out of politics. But secondly, if you're cynical about that, speaking to your viewing audience, if you're cynical about that, you just don't manipulate Ho Chi Minh in this way. You've got to have his cooperation at the time of that precisely and that delicately. And I haven't seen him sitting in on any Democratic strategy meetings thus far.
Senator, what is, in your mind, the big issue of this campaign?
I think there is one. Well, I think the big one is one that may surprise you somewhat, that it's not generally described as an issue. But I think it's the question of whether or not Americans in the future are going to be able to trust each other. Because this is the kind of society that's built only upon trust and the willingness to cooperate and understand each other, be compassionate, work together. And now Americans, I think really, the underlying cause of so much of this unrest, which is described as racial tensions, demonstrations, riots, and so on, is the fact that Americans believe in something, are beginning to believe, in something of a shock, that this whole concept of trust among peoples is no longer workable. They think that all these threats are directed at them, and they're not sure anymore that they can trust people who are different from themselves. Whether they're black or Puerto Rican or some other ethnic group or some other part of the country, some other region of the country, or some other economic class. Although we've never had a perfect society where everybody is perfect and can be trusted, nevertheless, we've recognized that to make freedom work, you've got to trust people, even those who may be evil, those who may feel insecure and lash out even at their friends as well as their enemies. Trust weak people. You've got to do it in order to build this capacity for our people to work together. And I think that for the first time, at least in my lifetime, there's been a great shock administered to this capacity of Americans to trust each other. And that, to me, is the great issue of this campaign. It will have to be decided. It may not be decided by November 5th, and so in that sense, it may not be an issue in the campaign. But it is, I think, at the heart of most of the problems we face. Problems of building the cities by getting the cities and the suburbs to cooperate and use their resources together. The problem of living with different kinds of people. The problem of melding our different regions in this country together. It's all based upon this question of trust.
You don't think that an election of a Republican administration would contribute to bringing this trust among peoples again? Or does it have to be a Democratic administration?
This question of building trust, you know, you can't pass a law to do it. You can't announce a policy to do it. And these people who don't have a stake in our society, you can't satisfy their housing needs overnight. You can't satisfy their job needs overnight. You can't satisfy their urging for dignity overnight. But you've got to have the kind of leadership that creates confidence in them that your purpose is to make it possible for them to improve their lives. Now, Mr. Nixon has never shown any creativity in this field or any initiative in this field or any real concern in this field in his public record. And this is not a partisan statement. You can look over his record and examine those things which he himself regards as the milestones of his career. And he does not speak of this area of building an America of opportunity for the of the disadvantaged. And you've got to engage their trust and confidence.
Senator Ramos, you stressed several times today that Democratic administration in the past 6 years has kept America moving ahead. Now, if that is the case, why is there such disenchantment with the administration or with the Democrats?
Unhappiness about the war, which rests on a commitment made in 1954. We committed ourselves then to build a separate government in South Vietnam, contrary to the clear intent of the Geneva Accords. And I'm not here passing judgment on the wisdom of that commitment, but we made the commitment then. So that if there is disenchantment with this policy, it ought obviously to go back to the roots of that commitment and those associated with it. So this is not a Democratic label. This is a policy that three presidents now have had to pass judgment on. to abandon the commitment or to support it.
But the Republicans, the Republicans say that while the original commitment was made in 54, it was the Democrats who escalated to the point where we couldn't get out of it.
Well, I'm not going to use their route of putting a party label on it. I could have said, which I didn't do, that this was a mistake in 54. I didn't because I don't want to drive the dialogue down to that level.
But they're doing. They said
it's fine. I'm not going to use their methods. If I use their methods, I'd be a different man. I can only use my methods. The commitment was made. Obviously, President Eisenhower did not know then, nor did anyone else, what that commitment would lead us to. And we can't possibly guess what his position might have been on the subsequent decisions that were made. I'm not trying to draw that argument. But the commitment was made then. And so every president thereafter had to decide whether to abandon it or support it. Now, maybe the subsequent presidents made mistakes in deciding to support it. But the interesting thing is that at this point in time, no presidential candidate in this year has advocated abandoning it. And no member of the United States Senate on either side of the aisle has advocated abandoning it, even today. So there's plenty of blame. That's what we're talking about. Our problem is to end that war. And this we need to do as quickly as possible. This obviously, the division in our own party about it has created some of the disaffection of the Democratic Party, clearly. The race relations, the unrest in our society, this is what happens to every maturing society as it becomes crowded and industrialized, complex, and cities begin to deteriorate. Life becomes unacceptable. And when you add to that, the history of slavery in this country, which certainly didn't begin in 1960, which goes back to colonial days, we brought these people here in chains. They didn't come here in search of opportunity. And in 1876, the election of 1876, when we had a chance to adopt policies which would lead us to an enlightened view of our responsibility to these people we brought here in chains, the election went the wrong way. Set the pattern of race relations for almost 100 years. Now we've got to undo all that has been done over these years. And it began to erupt in the 60s because in the 60s we finally became an affluent society insofar as most Americans are concerned. And with television and radio and store windows, the poor could see the gap between the affluent and themselves. And they saw no reason why it should continue. So it's this very affluent which has done two things. First of all, made the affluent selfish, and secondly, made the poor less patient. And so the thing has erupted into unrest. This has happened so often in the history of the country. It isn't a democratic phenomenon. And indeed, you could make the case that our failure in the 60s, from 52 to 60, to do the right things about the problems of our cities may have intensified the problem. President Eisenhower vetoed two housing bills. He vetoed two area redevelopment bills designed to help backward areas stimulate their economies. He vetoed a water pollution bill designed to step up our investment in the waste treatment plants from a pitiful $50 million a year to an almost as pitiful $90 million a year. Now, these are city problems that administration wasn't concerned about to the extent that perhaps it should have been in order to minimize what has erupted in the 60s. So if you want to look back and read history and try to find blame, you can find all kinds, but the important thing in 68 is that you're talking about three candidates for president who are not president. And you're talking about which of them offers the best conceivable response to these problems, which are human problems based upon the underlying growing distrust of Americans for each other. We've got to recreate that distrust. We've got to strengthen it. To deal with these problems, and that's the basis upon which this election ought to be decided.
Don't you find, Senator, that the big issue as you go around the country is this so-called law and order issue rather than Vietnam?
Law and order has much to do with what I said. Thomas Jefferson said years ago, to have law and order in society, and he used the phrase in the time-honored sense, it's got to be a society in which every member has a stake, and you can't build it on ignorance, indigence, and oppression. You can have law and order only in a free society whose progress has a stake in the future. Now, he also needs strong police forces. Let me point this out, that this Congress, this year, is the first Congress in the history of the country to enact a federal aid to local and state police forces bill. We're undertaking to help them recruit more men, better trained men.
New Britain, Connecticut, October 22, 1968.
The American people about our policy in Vietnam, and he said this. He said if Humphrey and Nixon and Wallace were to tell the American people what their policy in Vietnam would be, and these were his words, he said, I doubt that the American people would have the ability to make a judgment. The American people aren't about to elect a president who has that little faith in their capacity to understand the difficult problems and issues of our time. The American people aren't about to elect as president for the next 4 years a man who doesn't have the courage to face his opponents in open debate. Because we need a man of courage as president. We need a man of confidence. We need a man who has convictions. We need a man who trusts his people and whom his people trust. Mr. Nixon, Mr. Wallace, don't meet that standard. I'd like to say something to you about the kind of country in which we live. Here you have in Abe Ribicoff and myself, the sons of immigrants to these shores. And all around me, I see the faces of people who are here because someone came to this country looking for freedom. Freedom from fear, freedom from hatred. People who came to this country not to deny opportunity to others, but to seek that kind of opportunity which they understood was available to everybody. Those are the faces I see all around me here tonight. These are the faces of people who have found what others came here to find for them. Freedom, opportunity, a stake in this society, and a promise for improvement in the years ahead. That's what we've got, and we've got it because someone came here with the courage to seek it, not only for themselves, but everyone else as well. That's what America represents. We understand something further, that to provide this kind of opportunity, to build this kind of America, we must build an America that is strong. Strong not only economically, strong not only in material things, but strong in their faith in each other. And that's what we built here. That's what John Kennedy came here in 1960 asking you to help him to do. And that's what we've done in the last 8 years. Let me tell you something that John Kennedy said here in 1960. He said, Mr. Nixon leads a party which has opposed progress for 25 years. He leads a party which in 1935 voted 90% in the Congress against a 25-cent minimum wage, which in the 1930s voted 90% against the Social Security Act. And he leads a party which voted 99% against medical care for the aged tied to Social Security. And this is the same Mr. Nixon in 1968 as the Mr. Nixon which President Kennedy campaigned against and defeated in 1960. Now, what wasn't good enough in 1960 isn't good enough for America in 1968. At 7%, after seven Democratic years, we've had 91 months of unbroken economic expansion. The unemployment rate has been cut to 3.5%. The total number of jobless has been cut from 5 million to 2 million. And in the process, we've increased our annual production in this country of goods and services from $500 billion to $864 billion, almost double what it took us 180 years to build up in 1960. And what has it meant? It has meant that most Americans today are living better than Americans have ever lived before. All of us in this square are living better than those who came here to make it possible for us to be here ever dreamed would be possible for their children. This is what Kennedy started in 1960, and this is what Democratic administrations have made possible in the last 8 years. But more important than that, we've been able, as a result of this great increase in production, to double our annual investment in school. We've been able to double our annual investment in health facilities. We've been able to double our investment in manufacturing plants and industries which provide the jobs that create the opportunities and make possible the schools, which are the promise of a brighter America tomorrow. That's what we've done in these last 8 years, and we've done it not simply to gain material affluence, but because we recognize that only in an open, expanding, growing society can we make it possible for every American to find hope, hope for improvement for himself and for his children and for the generations that follow. The kind of hope that our ancestors came here and found. The kind of hope that every living human being is entitled to, and especially in this great, free, wonderful America. That's what we've done in the last 8 years. I think I ought to tell you a little something about what this has meant in Connecticut. During the Nixon years from 1953 to 1960, the number of manufacturing jobs in Connecticut dropped by 54,000. In the 8 years since, manufacturing jobs have increased by 73,000. In every major city in Connecticut, employment has risen substantially during these Democratic years, up 20% in Bridgeport, 14% in Waterbury, and 29% in Hartford. Right here in New Britain, the unemployment rate in 1961, after 8 years of Nixon, was 9.6%. In May of this year, after 7 years of Kennedy, Johnson, and Humphrey, was 3.3%, or almost two-thirds less. These things don't happen by accident. These things happen by design. These things happen as the result of leadership of men who care about what happens to the rank-and-file citizens of our country. These things happen as the result of policies designed to make life better for every American. Now, we've got tough problems here in 1968, and I wouldn't tell you otherwise. We've got the problem of settling the war, which we must end as soon as possible. We've got the problem of finding ways to make our cities livable places of opportunity for all our people. We've got the problem of convincing Americans that they can trust each other, that they can live together and work together, and build together, and plan together, and work together in an ever-growing, brighter America. Because this kind of a society is built on trust, the kind of trust that is willing to take a chance on its neighbor, whether that neighbor is next door or 3,000 miles away. You can't build a free society, or a strong society, or a rich society by dividing people against each other. You can't build that kind of a society by stirring up fear and hatred, as some warned in this campaign. Trust in each other. trust in our leaders, the willingness to cooperate and work together. That's the magic answer to a harmonious society which America started out to build 180 years ago. And in 1968, with a gross national product approaching $1 trillion, with an America that has absorbed 40 million strangers from overseas and made them Americans equal with all others, we've achieved a pinnacle in our capacity to build an even greater America tomorrow. This is no time to doubt. This is no time to fear each other. This is no time to hate each other. This is a time to trust each other and to give each other an equal chance in freedom and growth and hope. That's the kind of a country we have. An inspired American by the name of John Gardner, who was secretary of HEW not so long ago, wrote this about the American dream. And I'd like to read it to you as I close, because this, to me, tells the American story. He said the American dream is based on the conviction that every individual is of value. Or so we have always told ourselves. A free society should produce free and responsible individuals as a tree bears fruit. That is its purpose. It should enable the talented to develop their talent. It should enable each person to achieve the best that is in him. It should help the lame to walk, the despairing to hope, and the ignorant to know. It should fight every condition that stunts human growth, or warps the mind, or dulls the spirit. By doing so, it should make man more free, more sufficient, more responsible. That's what America represents. And every soul in this square is a living, breathing demonstration of that fact. So let's continue to build what John Kennedy started out to build. Let's continue to build what our parents and grandparents came here to build. And if we do, yes, we'll end the war in Vietnam. We'll build livable cities. We'll build hope for every American. That we're determined to do if you'll help us on November 5th. Give us your help, and we'll do this thing for you. Thank you very much.
St. Valentine's Church, Bloomington, New Jersey, October 23rd.
Of the United States told us that we needed to make the country move again. Well, I was reminded of this yesterday when Mr. Nixon made a promise that if he's elected, he would create 15 million new jobs. Now, what does his record say? He has said in this campaign that he's ready to be held fully accountable for the policies of the 8 years when he was Vice President of the United States. And what were those policies? In those 8 years, we had 3 recessions. And what did they cost us? They cost us $175 billion in production in this country. That meant that each of you was less able to provide for your family than you would have been otherwise, less able to educate your children than you would have been otherwise, less able to set aside something for your old age than you would have been otherwise. And when Mr. Nixon left office as Vice President, there were 5 million Americans unemployed, and we had an unemployment rate of 7%. Jack Kennedy said this wasn't good enough, that we had to get the country moving again. He kept his promise. Democratic presidents, Kennedy and Johnson, have kept that promise. Democratic congresses have kept that promise. And that unemployment figure of 5 million has been reduced to 2 million. The unemployment rate has been reduced from 7% to 3.5%, And the result is that most Americans are living better than Americans ever lived before. That the kinds of Americans I see in front of me here this morning, whose parents came to this country to find opportunity for us, are living better than those who came here ever dreamed they would live. But even more importantly, as a result of the great growth in national production since 1960, an increase of almost $400 billion, not only have we been able to build better lives for our people, but we've been able to build a better country. We've doubled our annual investment in this country in better schools. We've doubled our annual investment in this country in health facilities. We've doubled our annual investment in this country in new manufacturing plants, new industries, with the jobs that they create, with the increased income that they provide. This is what we've done in these last 8 years. And why have we done it? We've done it because we understand that you can create opportunity for people only by building a strong and growing economy. You build law and order in any society by creating opportunity for every member of that society. You don't build law and order by dividing people against each other. You don't build law and order by stimulating fear and hatred, by advocating division. You build law and order by creating more opportunity. And that's what we've done in the last 8 years. We've not done the whole job. But the answer to that fact is not to stop doing what we've been doing, but to keep on doing it until we have a better life and opportunity for every American. And those of us who come from immigrant stock ought to understand that lesson of history. My father came to this country to escape fear. He came to this country to escape hatred. He came to this country to find opportunity for himself, not to deny it to others. And he found it here. And the fact that his son is running for the Vice Presidency of the United States is surely some indication of the kind of opportunity you can have in an open, growing, expanding society in which every American has a chance to get ahead. Surely, this is the lesson. And so I'm delighted to have this opportunity to travel around this great country and to meet my fellow Americans of all races and colors, of all national origins, from all areas of the country, to tell them that I'm grateful for what America represents, that I'm grateful for what America has done for me and other descendants of immigrant stock. We've become Americans, and in the process, we have strengthened America. We have strengthened America because we brought to America the skills that have been developed here, the talents that have been developed here, the cultures of our homelands, which have enriched the culture of America, the dedication and belief in liberty, which has strengthened that great tradition of freedom, which has made America strong. This is what we've given to America. And in return, America has given us so much. It's been a great partnership of the former haves and the have-nots, a great partnership of strangers to these shores and those who are already here, the great example of what happens when people of different kinds and origins learn to trust each other and work together and build together a future for themselves and their children. This is the great lesson of America. It hasn't been disproved by the events of recent years. It's been proven by the events of recent years. The fact that we still have Americans who haven't a stake, the fact that we still have Americans without hope, the fact that we still have Americans who are restless, doesn't prove that the way we've dealt with such problems in the past is wrong. All it proves is that we still have an unfinished job to do. And the way to do it is the way Americans have always done it. by opening our arms to all who want what America promises and to make it possible for them to get it. That's the lesson of 180 years of American freedom. And that's the lesson, my friends, of this election campaign. Hubert Humphrey is a man who understands this lesson of America, this message of America, more than any other man in public life. From the first day he first entered public life as mayor of Minneapolis, he has been fighting to improve the lot of the average American. He's been fighting for human rights. He's been fighting for peace, and he's been winning those fights. Sometimes the victory came 10, 15, or 20 years after he began the fight, but he persisted in it, and he's chalked up great victories in education, civil rights, Medicare, health for the poor and the unfortunate and the disadvantaged, and in the process, in that quarter of a century, he's helped build a stronger America. And what about his opponent? Mr. Nixon served in the Congress of the United States for 6 years. And in his own campaign literature this year, he doesn't claim to have done a single thing creative in that 6 years. You just look at this brochure of his record in Congress, his own brochure, and he tells us only two things. That he won his seat to the Senate in 1950 by 700,000 votes, and that he was endorsed in 1948 by Democrats and Republicans for re-election. He doesn't claim to have done a single thing in that 6 years, or to have tried to do a single thing to improve the lives of Americans. Now, when he's running for president, yesterday, he suddenly learned that jobs are important to Americans. And he promised 15 million of them. But look at his record, and what has he done to make this possible? Not a single thing. And as vice president of a national administration for 8 years, all he produced was recessions and unemployment. That's his record. He voted against aid to education. He voted against Medicare. He's voted against everything that would improve the lot of the average American. And now he asks you to believe that he stands for those things which he's never stood for before. That's the reason why he won't debate his opponents. That's the reason why in 2 years he hasn't appeared on one of those national programs like Meet the Press or Issues and Answers and Face the Nation, because he doesn't dare to face the sharp questions of these sharp reporters before a national audience. And this is the man why, when he was asked the other day, he didn't have something to say about Vietnam. He said, "I doubt if the American people would have the ability to make a judgment." He doesn't trust the American people, and they don't trust him. We're fighting an uphill fight. To win it, we need your help. In the next 2 weeks, I've detected in the last 2 weeks a great surge of interest and enthusiasm and response, but it's got to gain momentum. It's got to be pushed. It's got to be helped. We've got just two sets of vocal cords. We need your help. We ask your help, not for ourselves, not for our party, but for the America we want to build for tomorrow for our children. God bless you all.
Irvington, New Jersey, October 23rd, 1968.
God give us this for the purpose of dividing people against each other? Did he give it to us for the purpose of separating the affluent and the poor by fear and hatred? Did he give it to us to divide mankind? Or did he give it to us to divide man, to unite mankind? I'm sure you know the answer. This is the America which welcomed 40 million immigrants from overseas, immigrants from whom we descended. They came here not looking for fear or hatred, but for freedom. They came here not to deny opportunity to others, but to take the advantage of opportunity which they understood was available to everybody. They came here and found an America willing to receive them, to trust them, to help them, and we, their descendants, have a standard of living which I'm sure they would consider unbelievable because of their faith and courage and because America gave them an opportunity to build this kind of a country for our benefit. America has grown because it has welcomed the immigrants, because it has welcomed all who wanted to come here, not only to give them a chance, but to be enriched by the skills and the talents and the cultures and the dedication to liberty of different kinds of people. This nation was created by God to prove that different kinds of people could live together in peace and harmony and love and justice. That was God's message. That was God's message, and no country has ever been so well equipped to do God's work as America is in 1968. You remember how President Kennedy closed his inaugural message? He said, "Let's remember that here on earth, God's work must truly be our own." And what is that work? That work is the work of understanding each other, of trusting each other, of risking injury at the hands of each other in order to build a greater trust and confidence, in order to build a greater country. And this is what John Kennedy undertook to do beginning in 1960. He said, "We must get this country moving again." And by that he meant, we must build a country that offers more opportunity for more people. And we've done it. We've almost doubled our national production as a country. And what does that mean? We've almost doubled the fruits of our labor, the fruits of the labor and skills and managerial ability of the American people in order to create an expanding opportunity for the advancement of all Americans. Thomas Jefferson said, 180 years ago, that you build law and order only when you build a society in which every member of it has some hope to improve his life. Now you need law enforcement agencies, and you need law enforcement agencies made up of men who are dedicated to peace and order in the community, who are educated for it, trained for it, equipped by their communities for it, in all of the up-to-date modern police techniques, because the first obligation of any organized society is to make it safe for its people and their homes and their lives, their communities and their streets. But we understood, as Jefferson said, that you can't have law and order built on ignorance, indigence, and oppression. You've got to build it on education, enlightenment, and opportunity. That's the way you make a society safe. That's the way we've made our country the country of law and order. We've got 2 weeks to go before Election Day, and we need to win that election. Not for Hubert and Humphrey and Ed Muskie or the Democratic Party, but for the American people. Because we've got to win the victory for freedom and opportunity and justice. And the presidential candidate who represents those things above all others on his record, on a record of 25 years of fighting for just those things and of winning those fights, is Hubert Humphrey of Minnesota. We can't win this fight without your help. And I beg you for that help, because I want to see tomorrow in the lives of my children the kind of America my father came to this country to find. The country of opportunity. Golden opportunity. Everywhere. Whatever his circumstances, wherever he comes from. I found it. You know, my father died a year after I was elected governor of Maine. And I'm sure he was convinced that he had found what he came here to find. Mr. Wallace's forebears in the 1920s came up to New England. The Klan, they came up to New England, and who were they fighting then? They were fighting the Poles and the Italians and the Lithuanians and all these foreigners from overseas. That's who he was fighting, he and his forebears in the 20s. That's the man we got to defeat on November 5th. And we've got to defeat him so badly, we've got to defeat him so badly that his kind and his message is never heard again in America. He's the man who has divided us by fear and hatred. He's the man who set ourselves against each other. He's the man who, because of his hunger for power, is willing to risk everything that America has built over 180 years. Defeat him soundly on November 5th. Boys come from the same stock we do, they better think and think deeply about what their candidate represents, because he'd be among the first to be destroyed by this kind of doctrine. We preach in America the doctrine of love, compassion, understanding, unity, freedom, and opportunity, and it's the only message for America in 1968. Thank you all very much.